Anne-Marie Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Timmery and I very seldom disagree, but on past shows, we have had sort of mild disagreements about the nature of education and whether we should be indoctrinating our kids. I found it to be a fascinating conversation, Timmery, so I wanted to pick it up again this week. And the context was, I think on past shows, we have talked about things like, you know, whether coaches should be able to pray on the field and the religious liberty they are allowed as state employees, and whether Catholic schools should be removing all of their statues like they recently did in California. And I've argued that in many ways, education is simply the passing along of certain doctrines that the teacher believes that they want the kid to believe. So beliefs about reality, whether that's doctrines about Christianity, like doctrines about Jesus, that he was fully God and fully man, or doctrines about, you know, whether or not we like a free market system. Right? Like, these are all beliefs about reality that we pass along to our kids. And so I'm okay with that. I think that's what we do. And if you want to call that indoctrination, in fact, I did call that indoctrination, I think that's okay. Now, you had some issues with the whole term indoctrination.
Yeah, I disagree, because indoctrination, what people use, you know, the definition people mean by it isn't just teaching or instructing someone, but it's teaching someone to really kind of grasp onto something without having this critical thought approach that I'm reasoning toward truth. Instead, it's just like, this is what we teach, accept it. And that's unreasonable. And a lot of people do believe that Catholicism is unreasonable, because people think that we are just indoctrinating without giving sound proof and encouraging people to find for themselves, which Catholicism does encourage.
Right. So it may be just an issue of terms. So I would call that fideism, which is belief without any rational basis. So I just accept on faith certain things about reality, but I have no evidence for them. I have no reasons to back them up. I just accept them. That has a philosophical term, fideism. And of course, we're not fideists as Catholics. We believe that we accept everything about reality, ultimately based on evidence, or at least there's evidence available for it. We have a strong scholastic tradition within Catholicism. We love science, all of those things. Okay. So as Catholics, I would say then, we indoctrinate our kids in the beliefs, and those kids, and whoever, frankly, adults, right? We can educate adults. Whoever we're educating, they may or may not understand all of those reasons, but we're still trying to convince them that what we believe is true about reality. And if they believe something different, that ultimately they're mistaking. I just think that's what teaching is. I mean, that's what education is. You're trying to get kids to accept a fact about reality, whether it's 2 + 2 = 4 or Jesus was God. I believe those are both facts, and that if you disagree with those, you're ultimately wrong, and I'm going to try to get you to come to my side, if you will. And it's not true because I believe it. It's just, it's true, therefore I want you to believe it, because otherwise you'd be mistaken.
We're working with truth, and I think that's what's fundamental. And that's what I'm trying to say. We're working with truth, and other ideologies, for example, such as the gender ideology, such as the fact that promiscuous sexuality will make you happy. Those aren't truth.
Yeah,
false truths.
Yeah, but let me jump in there, Timmery. They think they're true, right? And so when you have someone teaching gender ideology in a school, it's because they are convinced that that teaching is true, that it's correct. If they thought it was false, they wouldn't believe it. Okay.
Right.
So, and that's what I'm saying. Any teacher who's standing up in a public classroom, in a Catholic classroom, in whatever, the Methodist classroom, any teacher that stands up is teaching because they think that what they are teaching is true. They may not have thought about that, right? They may be just spewing stuff because they were told to spew it, but ultimately, they're not going to just tell you a lie. Unless there's some sort of psychopath, right, teacher. But no, they teach because they think it's true.
Right.
So that is what education is. So
true.
So when we
get
these educators, like these people at this Catholic school that's no longer Catholic, that took away all the statues, their argument was, well, we're not here to teach kids anything. That's essentially what they said. We're welcoming. We don't teach the Catholic faith as true. We don't teach anything as true. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that was their argument. Everybody who believes anything can come to this school. And in my mind, I'm thinking, that's idiotic. No, they cannot.
But they're still saying, so we're talking about, for those who don't know, there's a Catholic school here in California that has removed, I mean, almost like 200 statues, the most recent being of the Blessed Virgin Mary and Jesus in the middle of their campus. And basically what we're seeing continuously in California is the removal of our Catholic identity, both in statue and in teaching. I mean, teaching what is not true, allowing teachers to be present who are not living lifestyles that are even healthy examples in any way whatsoever for young, impressionable teens.
Well, and the problem is that they have ceased to believe, these teachers or administrators or whoever's running these schools, they have ceased to believe, if they ever did, that Catholicism is true. Right. I mean, that's the bottom line. If they thought it was true, they would try to convince the kids that it was true. They obviously believe that it's false, or they wouldn't be so eager to get rid of all the statues. And I just think there's a lot of clergy out there who don't get this, right? That they, what you are holding to, it's either true or it's false. If it's false, forget it. Like, give it all up. We don't need somebody standing up and just going through the motions of religiosity if you're not convinced that this is true. And so there's a lot of like Catholic schools out there, Catholic in name, but others too, evangelical schools, that call themselves Christian, that aren't actually teaching the faith as true. They're just holding to the name. And that's ultimately the problem. What you are doing then is teaching your kids something else is true, secular humanism or some other thing.
Well, and this is where we have an issue today, that people, I think in general, in the name of being inclusive and tolerant, are being punished. That's what kind of fueled this conversation on the last show as well, as we were talking about this football coach back in 2015 that was fired for taking a knee after a game and silently bowing his head and praying and thanking God for the victory because he thanks and praises God for his successes in life. And here we see, you know, government employees. I mentioned a close family member of mine who isn't even allowed to have a cross in, you know, the workroom, is being pressured to hire certain people to be all-inclusive. And when you get to the point, Don, where you can't even bow your head as a private individual and pray silently, people are being punished for that. And I get that, yes, it influences people because they see you. There's something wrong, and that's what's so frustrating, whether it's us claiming our Catholic identity as a Catholic school or this government employee.
Well, and you dig into the history of this, Timmy, it's actually quite interesting. We're coming up here on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. The whole notion that you would have a private life, because that's what they want the employees of the federal government to do, right? Do whatever you want in your private life. Just don't bring it out here into the public square. That whole notion started with the Reformation and is a very Reformation idea. Luther was one of the first to really articulate this, that there's a public realm and a private realm, and your private spirituality can be kept relatively private. But out here in the public, you have to act according to different norms, that you can acquiesce to the desires of the public government officials and all the rest of it. The Catholics were aghast at this notion, and rightly so, because Catholics say, listen, this is true. This is true about all of reality, and all of reality declares the glory of God, and my faith is the essential part of who I am. I mean, there is no part of reality that's not part of Catholicism, right? Like the medieval communities that grew up where Catholicism was strong, everything revolved around that church in the middle of town, right? Your whole life was Catholic, because all of life is Catholic. And in America, because we are such a Protestant nation and founded very largely, unfortunately, in many ways, on some hard Protestant principles, the privatization of our faith, the not allowing the faith in the public square, has seeped out, and Catholics, I think, have paid historically the largest price for this, not least of which, frankly, in the whole public school system. I mean, the history of the public school system, why we have government-sponsored schools, was to make sure that Protestantism was taught to all of the kids, right? The reason we have a robust, or at least it has been, a robust Catholic school system in this country is because Catholics realized, well, if I send my kids to the public school, they're going to turn them into Protestants. That's what they're teaching there, and that's why they have that school. Government money was put out to make and ensure that people stayed Protestant. And as Catholics, you're right, Timory, we should rightly be concerned about that privatization of our faith, because Catholicism is not something that can be private. It's about all of us. It's about all of reality.
Well, right now, we're living in a time where every individual is struggling to be consistent in their own lives, where people are thinking, well, this is my church life, this is my sex life, this is my work life, this is my social life, and each area is not congruent. They don't match up. They're all separated out, and I think that this is a reminder for each of us. Who I am at work, I am Catholic. Who I am in my family, in my sex life, with my friends, I am Catholic. And any offense to prevent me from doing good is not good. If I'm doing wrong, if I'm harming people in the public atmosphere in the school system, that needs to be addressed. But prayer isn't harming people here.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, and at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So this is good news, Timory. The Kansas City Royals have a substance abuse program for baseball players on their team. And when I first read that, I thought, well, hey, good. I mean, I don't know what baseball players. I thought we got rid of that whole steroids problem. And I suppose maybe there's a few of them that, maybe they sneak a little marijuana in. I mean, I don't actually know. Baseball players, they seem like healthy folks, especially after that late 90s thing where they were hitting all the home runs. And, you know, we've gotten rid of the steroids. So what could possibly be involved in a substance abuse program with baseball? Well, I read a little more down the line. You know what it is? Pornography.
I think that this is fascinating, Don, because as a great awareness is created about the impact and harms of pornography, you're seeing Major League Baseball teams and their managers who are not only saying, our team members need to be aware of this, but this is such a big deal and how it impacts their children, their relationships, their spouses, the safety of women. We have to talk about this because truly, the issue with pornography today is a pandemic.
I really do appreciate this. So this comes out of the Kansas City Royals and their general manager, Dayton Moore. He explains that he was more interested than just developing players in the early years of their careers. I'm interested in more than just having good baseball players. These are young people who are going to grow up and hopefully have families, and they've got a long career. And in professional sports, I mean, a lot of times you're done by your mid-20s and your late-20s, and you got the rest of your life to live. And what kind of person are you going to be? And he said, I want to develop the kind of people who have character, who are going to be good husbands and good fathers. And if they're going to do that, they got to stay away from the porn. And I love this. I mean, I think that this needs to be out there more and more, and that the professional baseball team would be doing it is fantastic.
And you know what? This is a fantastic example. Dayton Moore, I have so much respect for this man because the fact that he is wanting to form these men to be good husbands and fathers, like you're saying, Don, shows the proper mindset an employer is having toward their employees, that we're not just caring for the fact that you're working and getting through the work that we need done and you're just another cog in the wheel, but you're a person who needs molding, shaping, and we want to work on the flourishment of who you are in your family and your community. And this is fantastic. You know, it's interesting, too, because I, with Pilates, I do a lot of, basically, people come to us after physical therapy or skip physical therapy. And I have a number of former pro ball players that I work with. And it's interesting to hear about the impact that bad habits such as these have had on their life down the road, and see them years later, and how when they didn't have that character formation and they had the fame just of being really talented at pro ball, that discipline, when it doesn't enter into other areas of your life, that's really unfortunate, and it draws the person down.
Yeah, getting a lot of money and fame and power when you're young can be very devastating, ultimately. It can really hurt people's character. That's a great point. So I also think that this represents a great opportunity for the church. I don't know if this general manager is religious at all or what his motivation might be, but whether or not he is, and whether or not the culture as a whole is religious, I think what is happening, I've seen this a little bit lately, is that people are starting to recognize just the objective damage that porn does to people. In fact, my wife and I just watched a program out of the UK. It's called Broadchurch. Are you familiar with the show Broadchurch at all, Timory?
I am not.
Okay, so it's a TV series that, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 episodes, and I think they've done 3 seasons. And it's it started out as a murder mystery, I think, was the first season. It's kind of interesting. So the 3rd season just came out, and we watched it. And here, it wasn't a murder mystery this time like it was the first 2 times. What had happened was a woman had got raped. That was the crime that had happened that they were trying to solve. She had been assaulted, knocked out, and raped while she was unconscious. And I'm sorry, this is tough subject matter, but the take that they had on this as they explored this, and this is the UK, right? This is as secular a nation as you're going to find, and it's a very secular approach to the subject. It wasn't really a religious take on it, if you will. Here's what they found. It was spoiler alert for anybody who wants to go watch Broadchurch, but it all revolved around young kids and porn and the abuse of women that porn was doing. And in the UK, porn is epidemic. Like porn, I think it's worse even than here. And I just found it so fascinating that objectively, the TV writers at this very famous show, it's a very popular show, chose as their subject matter the dangers of porn and the abuse of women. In fact, in one of the climactic scenes, the perpetrator explained his actions by saying, you know what, it's just sex. It's just sex. I mean, what's the big deal? It's no big deal. It's just sex. Who cares if I, you know, knock a woman out and perform the act that way? What's the big deal? Right? And I was fascinated. I thought it was an interesting take. The problem was they didn't ultimately have an answer. They saw the problem, but they didn't ultimately have the answer. In fact, there was a priest character, not a Catholic priest as far as I could tell, probably Anglican, who was sort of struggling, you know, well, what can I do? He didn't come down. Let's just say the priest didn't come down with, hey, here's the answer. Here's like, you know, the theology of the body that we would present as Catholics or something. But at least they recognized the problem. And as Catholics, we have a great opportunity to step into that void and say, yes, this is a problem. You are abusing women. This is terrible for young people. And we have an answer. It's not just locking kids away who have too much porn, but it is flourishing. It's love.
Right. And it's ultimately, truly, fundamentally, at the core of it, the greatest dehumanization of the person. You know, I'm so thankful that the former NFL player Terry Crews just last year spoke out about this, because I think this is part of the reason why, you know, the Royals baseball team has a program for personal formation for its players dealing with pornography. And something that stood out so much about Terry Crews' story is where he talks about how in the devaluing of other people, basically you set your own value above others when you look at pornography. And what happens is you look at that person as if they owe you. They are meant to serve you. And when they're not doing exactly what you want them to do, that they're not good enough. And I mean, this is ultimately this deep sense of pride and control and abuse that's taking place. But here's the deal, Don. It's with the best of the best men that this is happening. Our priest, when I came and did a whole series at my parish on pornography, I remember afterward he came and spoke to me and he said, this is an epidemic. He said, I've seen the best of men in our parish, some of the greatest leaders who have come in talking about pornography addictions.
It's affecting people in all walks of life. I know that even locally here in Orange County, in the Protestant world, Saddleback Church is headed by Rick Warren. It's one of the biggest worldwide churches. He has one of the best-selling books of all time, of course, The Purpose-Driven Life. His wife actually just recently came out and talked about her own struggle with pornography. And so it's affecting everyone. It's just it's creeping its fingers into every aspect of society and every aspect of our lives. And you're right, this story from NFL player Terry Crews is fascinating and instructive, and it's so nice that he's so self-aware of what happened. It cost him his first marriage, it says, because he had this sense of entitlement. He basically looked at his wife as someone who existed to meet his needs. And here's the thing, Timory, it's not that women don't get that, right? Like, women understand when they're being used, when they're being objectified. And that's not a good thing. You know, men out there who think that, oh, you just can go treat women like porn stars. No, they get that. And it's so sad when they feel like they have to accept it, right? I mean, especially among our young girls, like they grow up thinking, I exist to make myself pleasing to men. And it's just sad.
I really want to ask everyone, this is truly a timeless show we did just a few weeks ago where we talked about the impact of pornography on young girls in a multifaceted way. You have to go back and listen because the impact it's having, we can do something. And that's what's so great. There are so many incredible resources out there for people with a pornography addiction. For teens, you've got the Victory app that was put together by Life Teen and Matt Frad. You have software for computers, iPads, cell phones like Covenant Eyes. You have resources such as the organization Matt Frad's working with at thepornEffect.com that talks about the impact on the brain, ways to overcome addiction. And here's the thing. You've got to enter into deep prayer. You have to have an accountability partner. You have to recognize it as an addiction. There are steps that can be taken, but they are not easy steps, and you have to be willing.
That's an important point, Timory, that the steps have to be taken, right? It's not going to cure itself magically. It's not just going to disappear. Your relationships are not just going to get better. You have to take steps. And a lot of times, that's, I think, just taking the first step. But for guys especially, I think we're just extra proud creatures. It's a humbling experience to admit that, yeah, I've got to put the porn blocker on my laptop, or I've got to give my passwords to my wife so that she knows everything that I see on the computer. I mean, that's just, it's humbling. It shouldn't be humiliating, right? Humiliating is not the right word. We need to be humbled. We don't need to be humiliated. And if you're thinking it's humiliating, well, that's on you. It's no, you need to be humble. You need to accept that this is a problem and it can be cured, though. But as Timory just said, you got to take those first steps.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Don, there is quite a stink being made right now about the Nashville statement. I am amazed. Well, actually, I shouldn't even say that, but I am amazed by how upset people are. But in particular, I'm amazed at yet again the Christian community coming out and rejecting things that are so fundamentally rooted in our faith, in the Bible, and the tradition. So what's happened, if you haven't heard, this past week, a statement was issued by the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. It's an evangelical coalition for a biblical sexuality, essentially, that was founded back in the late 80s. And it's been noted as very controversial, and as some people would refer to it as bigot-filled and hateful toward the LGBT community. But what we've seen in this statement, Don, is it is truth, it is clear, and it is just reiterating what the Catholic Church has said biblically and in her tradition for many, many years. So it's amazing to see within the evangelical community this consistency on sexuality.
Well, and that's the thing. You hope they stay consistent. And of course, you know, I grew up evangelical, only came into the Catholic Church a couple of years ago. And as an evangelical, I would look at this and say, well, of course, that's what the Bible teaches. That's what we've always believed. This is not controversial, really. This is not bigotry filled. We are just affirming what Scripture teaches, and they're doing their best. It's interesting now, frankly, so many parts of this interest me, Timory, as a Catholic. Some of them are normal, right? You look at the people who are calling them bigots, and we've just learned to sort of accept that. Yes, if you stick to the traditional church teaching on sexuality, you're going to be called a hater. Are we hating? No. I mean, we've made that distinction again and again and again. You can love the person and hate the sin. And frankly, that I don't know, that's not that hard. Like we had a young man in our home recently who had same-sex attraction, living a gay lifestyle. We had a nice time. I mean, you can have friends, you can have relationships, you can love those people without, I don't think, he was under no illusion that we affirmed what he was doing.
Right.
He knew exactly where we stood, yet I don't feel like he felt hated at all. So I feel like we should be able to go past that. I understand we're not. A couple other things, though, did sort of jump out at me about this statement. One, they put in a sentence about whether or not it was justified to approve of same-sex marriage. And I thought this, they stepped out and made a bold move there, basically saying that we do not accept that as a Christian, it is okay to approve of it morally. Like, basically, it's not okay to say that that's not a sin. That was part of the statement. Like, it's not Christian to say that same-sex lifestyles, that affirming that is not a sin. And I thought, you know what? Good on you. That's the right way to go with that.
We can't remain neutral. There's no such thing as neutrality in the topic of male and female, you know, gender and transgender. This statement's very clear. There's a difference between men and women. Marriage is a covenant. We reject self-identity, you know, really proclamations that people might make. We embrace biology. And this is another one of the elements that I thought was fantastic, and they're very clear about this. We acknowledge that some people are born essentially with ambiguous genitalia. You don't necessarily know, but we encourage that person, to the best of their ability, embraces who they are through their sexuality to the best of what they can know, whether through the chromosomes and so forth. But that being said, we deny anyone who essentially believes that this person can't live a Christ-centered, happy, and flourishing life, even if there is confusion. And, you know, Jesus even talks about this in the Bible in Matthew 19. There are some people who are born that way as eunuchs and some people who make themselves that way. There are things we can't fully explain, but that doesn't mean that we fundamentally destroy who the person is because there's an ambiguity or truly a medical deformity in the body. And, you know, Don, coming back to your point that you made a second ago, because this is something that has really frustrated me in the aftermath of this statement being made. You talked about how you had a friend recently who was in your home and who has experienced same-sex attraction. I am so tired, Don, of the LGBT or the empathizers for same-sex attraction pretending like they're the only ones who have friends and family members who have experienced same-sex attraction. I have grown up my entire life with some of my two of my best friends growing up who now experience same-sex attraction. Some of my closest family members, closest mentors and dance teachers who all experience same-sex attraction. But Don, I never defined them by that. It wasn't even a pivotal part of my conversation about them. In fact, I feel like I'm objectifying them just as in using them as an example, because that's not who they are. And yet we're looked at as these bigots and hateful people who are out of touch and don't understand that experience. Trust me, I understand and know well.
Yeah, it's a great point, Timory. Now, here's one issue that I think the signers of this declaration, if you just joined us, we're talking about the Nashville statement signed by a bunch of evangelical Christian leaders, basically affirming traditional Christian teaching on same-sex attraction. Here's where I think this is going to go, and I'll just jump to the end of the argument, and I'll try to support it up. I think in a few years down the road, the people who continue to affirm the traditional Christian teaching on sexuality will almost have to become Catholic. And here's how I'm going to set that up. They'll either deny it, eventually they'll give up on it, or they'll have to become Catholic. At the end of the day, should the Lord tarry and we continue down this path, the Catholic Church, I believe, will be the only church standing that affirms the traditional Christian teaching on same-sex attraction. And as my model, I'm going to point towards the teaching on contraception. 100 years ago, it was unanimous in all of Christendom, in all of Christianity, Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, that contraception was a sin. The walls started to fall in 1930 at the Lambeth Conference with the Anglican Church there, who gave in on and said, all right, we're going to allow contraception in just a little bit. Now you can't find a single Protestant denomination, as far as I know, that is still against contraception. The Catholic Church is the only one standing. The same-sex attraction model, I believe, is going to go down the same path. And as evidence, I present to you the Nashville Statement. Now, the Nashville Statement's solid. It's fine. But you know who's not signing it? A whole bunch of evangelicals, many of whom actually support the most of the ideas in it. Okay? Right. even what we would call conservative evangelicals, many of them are not signing it because they have this issue or that issue, or you can't speak for me because I have a doctrinal difference in this area, or I didn't really like the tone here. There's so much division within evangelicalism, they don't even know what it means to be evangelical. It's hard to even define that anymore. And that's just Protestantism as a whole. And what you'll find is the few that remain, I believe, and this is just me. I'm not a prophet or a son of a prophet. I'm just looking at the way Protestantism goes and the culture goes. Eventually, you need something more solid than just, this is my interpretation of Scripture. Okay? It's never going to be quite solid enough to say, well, this is how we interpret the Bible, so as evangelical leaders, we're going to say this. Because you have a whole bunch of people like Jen Hatmaker, who already, you know, points towards Scripture and is quoted in this article I'm reading, rejecting the Nashville Statement, saying, well, we don't interpret the Bible that way, and who are you to tell us that we have to, and you don't speak for us anyway. Well, every Protestant can actually say the same thing. And ultimately, the movement is not built on a solid enough rock to keep this cultural movement going. Ultimately, they're going to have to step on the rock. I would point them towards the rock of Peter myself. I would point them towards the church. The Catholic Church is, I believe, going to be the last one standing. I just want to throw that out there. As much as I appreciate them with this Nashville Statement, I've seen all the turmoil underneath among even evangelicals, and I think it's not going to stand. The walls are going to break.
Because ultimately, if you are looking for truth, if you are looking to follow God's commandment, the Catholic Church is the only place that holds both the Scripture and the tradition of the apostles passed down. And this is why, even with the issue of abortion since the 70s, people have been entering the Catholic Church because they've seen the consistency of sexuality within the Protestant evangelical world is not consistent. And it's hard to send people to a church after they've gone through a crisis pregnancy when the pastor won't be true to his word. And that being said, I just have to say it's very unfortunate that the Jesuit Father James Martin is coming out speaking against the differences between men and women. And I'm sorry for anyone who has been led astray to believe that same-sex activity should be approved of. That is so unfortunate, Don, and I feel so bad that so many people are truly losing friendships because due to Father James Martin's work, they believe that the church has offered an option to accept LGBTQ sexual activity. We accept people, not activity.
Yeah, this is huge, and it is a big, big problem. So Catholics like you and I, Timory, with friends who have same-sex attraction, they're now potentially looking at us and saying, oh, well, as a good Catholic, you don't have to hold that position. So now
exactly.
I'm going to reject that friendship. It's a huge point. We may have to continue that discussion after the break.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Don, before the break, we were talking about, unfortunately, Father James Martin, one of the Jesuit priests, has come out with a book and a lot of writings in response to the Nashville statement. And people are losing friendships that have been formed over a number of years, like you were saying before the break, because people believe that the church can accept same-sex activity, that it is a neutral topic, and that Catholics are just choosing to be hung up on this, essentially. And what's happening is Father James Martin is leading people astray. I understand that he means well. He's trying to lovingly say we need to love and embrace people, but he's going too far in saying you don't need to change, that what the church is saying is making you feel dirty. No, you know, even Daniel Mattson, who we interviewed just a few weeks ago this summer, please go back and check out the interview, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. He talks in his book about how he appreciates when the church, even in short, clear statements, talks about the order of sexuality and how the order of sexuality that goes out of order, that act is disorder, not the person. And how we're called to see that there's a truth, there's a black and a white, there's a straight and narrow path to follow.
Yeah, a fascinating article at The Stream by Jason Scott Jones, who headlines it, Father James Martin burned the bridges to my LGBT friends. And he goes on to talk about how I've got people with same-sex attraction who I'm friends with, and I have for a long time, and they understand my position, and they accept that I love them. But now, because of this Catholic priest saying, essentially, that as a Catholic, you don't have to hold the position that same-sex activity is a sin, now they're looking at this author, Jason Jones, as a person who has an option. Like, oh, you could still be a good Catholic and not think that what I'm doing is a sin. And now, because of that, because you still think it's a sin, now I'm going to unfriend you. And I had not thought of this before, Timory, but I think this is a huge, huge point. Like, you're trying to help LGBT folks feel loved, you're actually having the contrary effect. You're actually harming relationships. You're actually making them feel less loved. And that's how it works, right? I mean, the Christian truth is Christian truth for a reason, because it leads to flourishing. You can't just go in and change it and think that everything's going to be all right.
And, you know, if you are experiencing maybe a pastor or priest who is teaching what is contrary to, you know, the tradition has taught, you need to go back and look at the documents. The church has been unwaveringly clear on contraception, abortion, homosexuality, because it recognizes at the heart of this there is a person who is seeking eternal fulfillment and happiness. And, you know, Daniel Mattson in his book talks about how, you know, people who are living in same-sex relationships, Yes, they are happy. They're enjoying them, but they're not fulfilled, and they're not happy long-term. They're still searching. While they might be having a pleasurable experience, while they may certainly have love within their friendship, there's more that they're searching for.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the Nashville Statement, which was created by a bunch of evangelical Christian leaders. And of course, it has, as you might expect, brought out the people who think that it is full of hate and that it's unbiblical, that it's actually unchristian. And before the break, I talked about some of the weaknesses, just inherent, unfortunately, in the Protestant movement in general. And this includes evangelicals, of which I was one for most of my life. I understand the movement intimately. I love the people and I understand they're doing their best. They understand that, yes, same-sex attraction is something we need to deal with and the Bible speaks this way. Unfortunately, the movement itself, as I mentioned before the break, is not strong enough ultimately to hold up the pro-moral teachings. And here's an example. Here's a story. The headline is this: Five Reasons Jesus Would Ask You to Unsign the Nashville Statement. What struck me right off the top is here's how she sets up. So she's got five reasons that you should unsign it, but here's her basis for authority. Whenever I have questions about the gospel, she says, I ask Jesus. Here are five things I would imagine him saying to those who sign. So let's just set that up for a second. I've got questions. What am I going to do? Well, Jesus, what would you do? And then I imagine him saying something. Now, folks, I don't know what her background is, but basic biblical hermeneutics, the basic biblical interpretation, basic interpretation of any text, if she accepts the Bible at all, does not involve you just closing your eyes and imagining what Jesus would say, right? Like, this is not going to lead anywhere good. Basically, she's just got some thoughts and some emotions. She puts Jesus's name on it and produces it on her blog post. So just to set that up, that's sort of the weakness, though, right? Like, that's the weakness. Ultimately, it's Lindsay Medford and her imagination of what Jesus would say versus everybody else's. Some of them have, I think, better biblical interpretation than others, but ultimately, where are they going to appeal to authority? So Lindsay goes on to give her five reasons, and, you know, they're not super strong, let's just say that.
Here's one of the things that she does, Don. Toward the end of her piece, she talks about how, well, if someone who is experiencing same-sex attraction, Jesus would sit down with this person and ask them to share their thoughts, their experiences, their loves, everything they've experienced in their family. And she basically says at the end, he'd think that he'd just, you know, accept it and nod his head and, you know, this and acknowledge this is your experience. This is what you've lived out. But what she's saying is that Jesus is not the divine word then. She is saying that God, I mean, if you read the Gospel of John, God is the Word. He is truth itself. He is the perfect concept of what truth is. And there is no ambiguity or self-definition with God. Jesus wouldn't sit down and say, well, that's how you define yourself, and this is your experience. Just like we can't say that certain things don't work in a certain order, essentially. There is a plan.
It's very interesting that she bases this whole thing on what she thinks, her word is actually imagines, what she imagines Jesus would do. She puts that it's not biblical, but she doesn't actually quote even one scripture verse in the entire article. And it makes me think, okay, on what basis, just give me something, on what basis do you think Jesus would sit down with someone and just affirm all of their experiences, all of their emotions, whatever they want to do? Where in the world, where we've got stories about Jesus. We have, even if you don't accept the Catholic Church's authoritative interpretation, even if you don't, all right, fair enough, you don't. You've got the Bible, though. We've got a lot of stories about Jesus in the Bible. Where in the Bible does Jesus just sit down with somebody, affirm what they're doing, say, you know what, you've had some tough experiences? I mean, would it have been the woman at the well, the woman caught in adultery? I mean, where exactly does he not end up with, now go and leave your life of sin, which is what he told the woman caught in adultery? I mean, that's a perfect example to me, right? Yes, he loved her. Yes, he didn't let the religious leaders stone her. All good, right? I get that. But then he said, you know what? You got to leave your life of sin. I mean, it's frustrating that she would even, frankly, bring up the Bible. Why? She should just say, listen, I want Jesus to be this way. This is what I feel like he's like. And so I'm just going to make up something for you. That would be more realistic.
You know, this example, yet again, of someone saying, hey, I'm a biblical scholar, because that's essentially what she's saying in her bio if you read it, and so many other people are saying, they're saying at the same time, trying to use God's word and say that there's no such thing as truth. But even in the introduction to the Nashville statement, they talk about how we're living in a post-Christian era, and how what's happening with this gender ideology, this transgenderism, is that people are being led down a road, essentially, of unhappiness because they can't even come to understand who they are. And yet again, it comes back to, does your body have a purpose? Does the human person have a purpose? A chair has a purpose to be sat on. You know, a table has a purpose to set things on and to be sat next to. You know, and you have to ask, you know, if a kid, for example, is shoving food into different orifices of his body when he's little, he ends up having to be taken to the emergency room. And the food has to be removed from these different orifices because that's not how the body works. That's not the purpose of those specific orifices, right? That's not the purpose of where the food belongs. The same thing can be said of our body, which is much more elevated and grander than any of the rest of creation. It has to have a purpose.
That's a great point, Timmy. And you can expand that to every other part of the body, right? Like, you go to the doctor, you know how they cure you? They look at every part of your body, all your organs, and they say, well, this is what this organ is for. The heart pumps blood, oxygenates the blood. If it doesn't do that, if it's not doing what it is made to do, then we're going to try to fix that. Your liver has a purpose. Your arms have a purpose. Every part of you, like, this is essential. Yet, when it comes to the genitals, oh, well, the genitals don't have a purpose. What? What? Where did you go to medical school? Like, do you actually want to go to a doctor who doesn't realize that that organ of your body has a purpose? In fact, that purpose is to generate life.
Create.
Like, that's why we call it a genital. Like, yes, it's mind-blowing the blinders we have to put on as people and as a culture to deny the truth that's literally right in front of us.
This has been Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.